Hello and welcome to your ability podcast today. We've got a short format podcast. We have some guests today who I'm going to introduce in a minute. Our topic today is going to be autism and neurodiversity. So if I get colleagues in the room to introduce themselves. Karen, do you want to say hello?
Hello, everybody. My name's Karen Snuggs, and I'm a disability business partner with the Business Disability Forum.
And Dave?
Hi, I'm Dave Stocks. I'm the Vice Chair for the Staff Disability Network.
And my name's Chris Quadling. I'm the Chair of the Disability Staff Network. For those who have been listening to us for a while, hopefully those will be familiar voices. So, Karen, if you want to give us a quick overview of the topic,
and yes,
maybe we can have a quick chat about it afterwards.
So we're going to be talking about neurodivergent spectrum conditions, but particularly a little bit about autism today. So I thought I'd start by just telling you what autism is, or a definition of autism. So autism is a lifelong developmental disability which affects how people communicate and interact with the world. And one in 100 people or 700,000 autistic adults and children in the UK. That's one definition of autism, but it's an evolving thing. Autism and the definition of autism doesn't suit everybody in the way that I've just mentioned. It's changed over time, and I'm absolutely sure it will change again in the future. There are some that feel that that definition is too broad, and for the reason that there are some people that are diagnosed with autism, and what is their challenge is bright lights and loud noises, for example. But there are others who need 24-hour care, and so they think that the definition is too broad. However, despite the different support needs required, people with autism face similar challenges, and that's whether they're getting enough support in education or in the workplace, or indeed being misunderstood by people close to them. So what does that mean in terms of being misunderstood? Well, when I talk to you a little bit about some of the behaviours and some of the things that autistic people may find challenging, it will give you an understanding of, you know, why some people that you probably may already know and you didn't know that they may fall under this into this group of people. So autistic people may find it hard to communicate and interact with people, but that's not all. And I think it's really important that when you're thinking about people that have neurodivergent spectrum conditions, the way those conditions affect them and the behaviours that they demonstrate will be very different, and they will not all find it difficult or hard to communicate, but some will find it hard to understand how other people think and feel. I mentioned about bright lights and loud noises. That can be very overwhelming or uncomfortable for some people that have autism. They may get anxious or upset about unfamiliar situations or social events, and they also can take a bit longer to understand information, and they may do or think the same things over and over again. They may find it really difficult and get upset if someone touches or gets too close to them, but then they can conversely get too close to others. And so the word spectrum, for some people, they don't like that, but it's the word that we've got at the moment, and it'll just demonstrate to you how autism affects people in different ways. When you think about behaviours that might indicate that someone has a neurodiverse condition. Things like being fixated on procedures and processes. Some people think about people with autism, sometimes they're abrupt and they think they're rude, or they take things very literally. So saying things like, oh, that was a piece of cake, or thinking outside of the box, for some people that fall under this heading of having a neurodiverse condition, that can be really difficult for them because they don't understand, because they think very literally. You may work with colleagues who don't interact, or they're not involved in office banter type situations, if you like. They don't understand sarcasm. They find those social interactions very challenging and quite difficult. But on the other side of that, they have skills and their attention to detail and their retention of knowledge is second to none. And we don't have time in this very short podcast to go into all the nuances, but I think it's interesting and I think it's helpful to know that when you're talking to or communicating with somebody with a neurodivergent spectrum condition, and this helps everybody though, it's about being clear and precise and using plain language. Avoid ambiguous language. As I said, you know, they don't necessarily get banter and sarcasm. For some, they need time to process information. So I'm going to give you in a moment a list of other conditions, but one of the conditions that falls under the in the neurodivergent spectrum conditions is dyslexia and dyscalculia. So thinking about how they process information, people that have dyslexia, for some, offering them specific instructions, if you're a manager, for example, can be really useful. The structure of that and knowing what to do and when can be really helpful. But also you need to consider alternative means of communication. Asking people what they prefer. Do they prefer email? Do they prefer face-to-face discussions, video or telephone calling? We're in this new virtual world. That's an option. But asking people what's the best format for them. When you're thinking about people with dyslexia, font, colour and layout of emails, you know, these are the things that can be really challenging, but are easily fixed, if you like. You know, when you think about loud noises, bright lights, they are some of the things that are very difficult to be able to fix, if you like, particularly if people are working in an environment like a busy ward or an A&E, for example. You know, there is noise, there is bright lights, but for offering people the opportunity to perhaps go off into a quiet space just for a few minutes to breathe and regroup can be really useful. I think it would be helpful if I just talked about some of the other neurodivergent conditions so that you have an understanding. It's not just about autism or Asperger's. ADHD, for example, very often people associate that with children. Well, these conditions are lifelong, and children grow up, are into adulthood, and their behaviours may change, but they still have ADHD, dyslexia, dyscalculia, as I mentioned, dyspraxia. A lot of people don't even know what, had never even heard of dyspraxia. And there are 1 in 17 people in the UK are dyspraxic, and you may not understand that you're working with people, or know that you're working with people that have these conditions and the challenges that they face every day. And then an acquired brain injury, that's something else that people don't consider. An acquired brain injury can become neurodiverse following an acquired brain injury. That's what I was trying to say there. Sorry. So it's a very whistle-stop tour. of autism. There's a lot more to it than that. But we have at the Business Disability Forum, and you all have access to it on our Knowledge Hub, our neurodiversity toolkit, which is full of really interesting advice and guidance, some facts and figures, and some myth busting around neurodiversity. So please feel free to register at the Business Disability Forum website for our Knowledge Hub, where you can find out some more information on this very interesting, complex and diverse subject.
Thank you, Karen. It's been a really good whistle-stop tour.
Thanks, Karen. Having recently been diagnosed with autism, I'm just finding my way with it. So some of the things that you said are really useful. One thing I struggle with is people giving me instructions. I can misinterpret what people are saying, and also it takes me time to process. But I'm a very visual person, so maybe if people gave me instructions in a more visual way, that may help. Although I don't take things literally, I am, and I'm a very out the side of the box thinker, so I understand that. One thing I do struggle with is if someone says they will do something for me, that's written in stone. So if someone said something, then I feel totally let down. Even if it's a minor thing, I feel totally let down if then.
So the moral to all you guys out there is, please don't tell David you're going to do anything for him unless you're actually going to do it. But I've got a grandson who's autistic, David, and that's one of our biggest challenges with him. Is if we say we're doing something and for whatever reason those plans have to change, his heart is often broken. He's a little boy, but he doesn't understand that things can change. We hope that as he gets older, that will be different. But from what you just said, David, I think perhaps it's going to be with him for the rest of his life. But these are the sorts of things that it's really useful for the listeners of this podcast to understand. Not everybody feels like this. Not everybody behaves like this. Not everybody has all the same signs and symptoms of these conditions. But there will be people that are listening to this who will be thinking, oh, I'm a bit like that. Or, oh, I know why so-and-so behaves the way that so-and-so does, because they could possibly be. I had an example to share with you very quickly, because I know time is of the essence. But I work with an organisation called Project Search, and Project Search offer supported internships for school leavers, education leavers, going into workplaces. And there was a director from one of my members who uses Project Search, shared with a group I was running recently, that one of their young interns, when he first arrived, he was very introvert, wouldn't speak very often, only spoke when spoken to, very often head down. One day the director's come out of his office and he said, look, I'm the director, so I rarely offer to make anybody tea or coffee, but I said, oh, I'm making a brew, does anybody want one? And everybody said no, except for this young man, who said, I'll have a hot chocolate, please. And he went, okay, yeah, that's all right, Nicholas. And he said, yeah, but could you just make sure that you put the milk in the microwave for 30 seconds, no longer? And can I have two marshmallows with my hot chocolate? Now, this is to the director of an organisation. But what the director said was, he smiled and went in to make this young man his hot chocolate. And he was delighted, because this young man would never have even said hello to him 6 months ago. So it just goes to show that how people are treated and the experiences they have in their life, how that can change not just them, but people's perception of them, as in the autistic ones, you know, trying to do a bit of myth busting around what people with autism can and can't do, what they learn and can't learn, and how they can develop, and some of their symptoms can be changed in some small way through schemes like, you know, workplace schemes. You know, that's fact at the beginning. 16% of all people with autism are in work, whereas 77 want to work. I mean, that's shocking. So anyway.
A huge disparity.
Yeah, it really is.
I think it's a really nice little story. So it brings two platitudes to my attention. One being that don't sweat the small stuff, which is always an important one, and then treat the people on your way up as you would like to be treated on the way down, right? So it's always good.
Now, that is exactly what I think is really good to end on, that last one. Absolutely brilliant.
Thank you both very much. I hope it's been a bit of a whistle-stop tour and given you a bit more insight on those topics. We are going to plan a longer podcast around this topic. There are so many nuances. We have so many experts in the organization who can talk about this. So I think we're going to try and look at something a bit more in depth about this. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Hopefully you'll join us again next time. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Cheers, bye.